You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Last week, Senator Bernie Sanders proposed a new bill that would reduce working hours for Americans. It's called the 32-Hour Work Week Act. The idea is to scale back on working hours with no loss in pay. Other countries like France and Belgium have already adopted shorter work weeks at the national level. Here's Senator Sanders talking to the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions last Thursday.
The question that we are asking today is a pretty simple question. Do we continue the trend that technology only benefits the people on top, or do we demand that these transformational changes benefit working people? And one of the benefits must be a lower work week, 32-hour work week. This is not a radical idea.
The Senate committee also heard from experts who have conducted pilot studies about the workability and potential benefits of a shorter work week. Coming up in just a bit, we'll dig into the history of the idea of shorter work weeks. Our first guest is a labor economist who's been involved in the research. He's here to share what we've learned about the idea of implementing shorter work hours here in the United States. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this idea? A national law mandating a 32-hour work week with no loss in pay? Have you had a full-time job that did factor out into 32 hours a week, whether that was 4 days or spread out over more days or what have you? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lonnie Golden is professor of economics and labor human resources at Penn State Abington. His research interests include working hours, flexible scheduling, and working time regulation. Lonnie, thanks for joining us today.
It is my pleasure to be here.
Can you tell us a little more about what exactly is in this bill introduced by Senator Sanders last week?
Well, first, let me say that work hours get determined in part at the organizational level, at the individual level, but also at the national level. So what Senator Sanders and Representative Takano have tried to do is change the discussion to what the length of the work week ought to be as a norm, as a standard. And what's in that bill is to reduce in four steps, gradually phased in over 4 years, the standard work week, which we've all lived with for a couple of generations at least, from 40 hours down to 32, and preserve the time and a half pay premium or pay penalty, whichever way you want to look at it, for hours that exceed 32 in a given work week. It also has something a little bit more ambitious in there, if that weren't ambitious enough, to have a pay premium of time and a half over 8 hours in a day.
And this bill says 32-hour work week, I believe, not necessarily a four-day work week. Is that an important distinction?
It is an important distinction, but most of us think of the 40-hour work week over 5 days, and that's what our labor historian will speak to. The idea was to codify from the early part of the 20th century a five-day work week and construct a two-day weekend. And so it's a 32-hour work week. It could be definitely spread over 5 days or even six if you think about it. But the idea is to compress the work week without necessarily having a reduction in pay into 4 days.
Now, you have looked, I understand, at employers who have tried this voluntarily without being required by law. Where have you seen these kind of experiments?
Well, some of them bubble up naturally because post-pandemic, a lot of firms had to deal with workers being out of the labor force and trying to draw them back in or trying to satisfy workers enough so that they wouldn't leave and go work elsewhere. So I don't directly ask employers, and that's very hard to do and expensive to do. But the Four-Day Global has done these studies where they recruit firms from across a variety of industries and across a variety of countries, including the U.S. and Canada, and have found that the companies that adopt a four-day work week are given some time to reorganize themselves first, and then they're measured before, during, and after what the consequences of these are on both the employer side and the employee side. And some of the crucial findings are that, not surprisingly, the workers in these situations, and it's hourly, it's salaried, it's executive, it's shop and line worker, are all expressing important gains, like reduction in fatigue, like improvement in their own self-reported ability to be productive. And finally, especially reduction in sleep problems, all things that feed into, at least indirectly, into productivity on an hourly basis. And that's kind of our angle in the U.S. has been thinking of productivity as how much can we work in a day and in a week, in a year. So what this discussion is forcing a lot of us to do is to reconsider, including firms, is to reconsider what productivity means. And if it's a per hour basis, if you can be more efficient in 36 or 34 or even 32 hours as an organization or as an individual, and maybe as a country eventually, then we have all this spare time to devote toward other activities.
Talking to economics professor Lonnie Golden from Penn State Abington about the idea of shorter work weeks after the introduction of a bill in Congress that would say, hey, let's make 32-hour work weeks the norm. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lonnie, I'm sure there are concerns from different sectors of the economy. One that leaps to mind, I think, is healthcare. Even if you're very productive per hour, there still needs to be that staff, nurses and doctors on call at a hospital or clinic 24 hours a day. Would it be realistic in that sector to have a shorter work weeks for everybody?
I think what the studies are showing, it might be obviously a little bit more difficult when you have to be physically present. And but the healthcare sector has had compressed work weeks for nurses, for other staff, where they have some control, especially the senior nurses and personnel, have some control over the days that they work. And they find that this is a tremendous benefit to themselves, their well-being, and even their productivity, at least as long as the extension of hours in a day doesn't go beyond 12, because they got these days off and this rest and recovery time during the day. So it's obviously easier to implement it in some type of industries more than others, but it's not impossible, even in areas that we're used to having full-time coverage being 40 hours a week. And mind you, if there is a reduction, it just means that some of that staff would be owed overtime pay. It's not that the hours couldn't be worked.
Another concern I think that might be out there right now is we keep hearing about, at least in many industries, a labor shortage. That business owner might be thinking, well, hang on, if the norm is working fewer hours, I have to pay expensive overtime to go over, say, 32. So I'm going to have to hire more staff. This might be a hard sell at this point in the American economy.
No, that's a good point. I think the industries and firms within them that are small and low margin and are concerned about meeting new standards like this, I think that that's legitimate. Having said that, some other research I'm doing is finding that people who work part-time voluntarily are among those that get the best consequences from work. Not too many hours, not too few. So firms are finding labor shortages if they're looking for people that hit the ground running with all the skills and experience they want. And it might require that, yes, the small firm, the restaurant, the business in any industry might be able to offer some part-time jobs to cover those hours in ways that hadn't been explored before. So yes, we all fear change, but I don't think the sky is going to fall in or collapse if we do that, even on these firms.
Let's bring on a caller. Jason is with us in Cudahy. Jason, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about, Jason?
I'm currently working a 4-day work week, but I still get generally 32 to 40 hours a week. I love it. It's really the only thing that's kind of keeping me at my job right now. It's a 3-day weekend, but anytime we're understaffed and I have to like cover for anyone else, then it gets up to the, you know, I'm working literally, you know, all day, those 4 days, and then I have no time to do any of my chores or whatever during the week. So I have to do that all during Friday, and sometimes I get kind of burnt out, but otherwise I love it. I wish everyone, every job would have a 4-day work week. It'd be great.
Jason, thanks a lot for the call. Lonnie, the benefit of that third day off, even if you cram those 40 hours into 4 days, what do you think?
I think what the caller is speaking to is exactly what these pilot studies are finding, that all the typical time pressures on a 5-day week are a lot easier to handle on a 4-day work week. And I think the bottom line is the companies, it's not exactly a random sample, but the companies that signed on to experiment with this, the bottom line is that 90% of them are continuing the four-day work week, and half of them said, you don't have to pilot this anymore. We're just going to adopt this. It's worked out so well for all of us. Remember, in companies, there are professionals and managers and executives, and I think there's this adjustment process that goes on. And by the way, not all of them are down to 32 hours. So like your caller said, it could be 34, 36. And realistically, there's coverage gaps. There's work that needs to be done, on short deadlines. And so some of the work will spill over into the new longer weekend, but it's not like it used to be spilling into a compressed weekend. They're finding that, you know, first of all, only 60% of the companies are doing Friday, and that's where most workers prefer it. But they're finding that you can enjoy Sunday now, whereas opposed to dreading that you got to not be rested enough to work the next 5 days. So these little marginal changes seem to be accepted by firms and everybody up and down the company.
Jason,
as well,
like Jason, thanks for the call. And Lonnie, thanks again for joining us today.
Absolutely my pleasure.
That's Lonnie Golden, professor of economics and labor human resources at Penn State Abington. His research interests include working hours and flexible scheduling. We've been looking at Bernie Sanders' newly proposed legislation in the Senate that would bring a 32-hour work week to the United States as the norm. Coming up, a labor historian joins us for a look back at the history of workers advocating for shorter hours. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you worked at a company that tried shortening hours or went 4 days a week after doing five? Do you run a business that's considering doing something like this? Join in at 800-642-1234. 1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation about reducing work hours, now looking at some of the history behind how we ended up with 8-hour workdays, 40-hour work weeks, and experiments with doing it different ways. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Ben Honeycutt joins us now, labor historian, professor at the University of Iowa. He's worked as a consultant to unions and businesses interested in shorter work hours. He's been studying this issue for a good long time now. Ben, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're certainly welcome.
You've written, Ben, that shorter work hours are the lost American dream. What do you mean by that?
This has been going on a long time. Work reductions, work was cut virtually in half from the beginning of the 19th century till 1920s, 1930s. No one thought the process was going to end. Took place primarily in the free labor market. People voted with their feet, working, negotiating with their employers, trading off hours to wages, that sort of thing. The upshot of which were, again, work hours cut virtually in half. People like John Maynard Keynes in 1930 predicted that we'd be working 2.5 hours a day. By 1980, his grandchildren, he said, would face the problem of leisure, which would be the greatest problem that we'd face. People like Walter Gifford, head of AT&T, talked about liberation capitalism. He thought that through the capital market, workers would be freed through shorter hours, that socialism and communism all promised liberation, but in the capital market, workers could be liberated in this process through the marketplace where people were offering their time for money, trading their time. And in that, as productivity became greater and greater, technology was able to do more and more of our work for us. Eventually, John Maynard Keynes, the most famous economist of the 20th century, said again, this short hours is inevitable, but yet we see the 4-day work week as something novel. It certainly was not. What's novel was the fact that after the 1930s, we have had virtually no increase in leisure, no shortening of the work hours at all. The predictions of people like Keynes and many, many others, no one predicted the process was going to stop. What's strange is this hiatus, this long period of inactivity when working hours have stabilized at about 40. And it's according to some estimates, working hours have gotten longer since the 1970s. Two weeks longer per year, according to Juliet Shore and others. So that to me is a real question.
Yeah, what happened, Ben, to stall us at this magic number of 40 hours as our assumed norm?
That's a question that I've been struggling with for 50 years. Why did this process that seemed to be inevitable stop? I'm not sure I've answered it fully, but I've given it a shot. I've written a whole lot of stuff trying to explain the ending of short hours. I think the main thing is that we have developed a work ethic like no other civilization in history. Work has become an end in itself for most of us. We can't imagine a world in which, and this, by the way, in our discussion of the 10-hour, the 4-day work week, leisure is sort of skirted around. Before, in the 19th century, and certainly into the 20th century, leisure was seen to be this great potential, offering us the chance to progress in the intangibles of life, community, family, spiritual, mind, all of those things. This is what Walt Whitman called higher progress. Free time would offer all of us, men, women, in a democracy, offer us access to Whitman said, higher progress, the higher goods of life, beyond the material, beyond making money, beyond work. There was this great possibility in the realm of freedom that we've lost contact with it. The third book, Free Time, The Forgotten American Dream, is that there was a robust discussion of what leisure could mean by a whole lot of people. That again, I would hope that this 4-day work week would, politics of it would reawaken this old discourse that used to be such an important part of this country's heritage, reawaken that forgotten American dream so that we could begin to reconsider the possibility that there's more to life, there's more to progress than just more work and more wealth, more consumerism forever. Maybe there is this higher progress, a realm of freedom that we can progress in our humanity, humane and moral progress. That's what I would hope that this would eventuate into, that sort of rethinking of what progress is all about.
Let's bring on a caller. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Great discussion. I'm doing a play on Joe Hill right now and the Wobblies, and really learning a lot about labor history more than ever. And I think if most Americans really reached back into our own history about the labor movement in America, they would be coming at things in a completely different perspective. And what your guest just said just reminds me so much of Bread and Roses and the Lawrence, Massachusetts strike and things like that. Back in the day when there were working conditions where, you know, half the children in Lawrence, Massachusetts died before they were 6 and the life expectancy was 39. I mean, if you're going from that historic perspective, it's a fascinating study.
Tom, thanks for the call. Ben, the early days of the labor movement in the 1900s and its connection to our work hours now.
I couldn't agree more. It's a fascinating story, the history of American labor, the history of American working class folks. It's absolutely the dream, the forgotten American dream of higher progress originates in working class people in Lowell, Massachusetts, the people there in the Lowell Mills, some of the women writing for their newspapers, talk about American progress as progressively shortening the hours of labor so that every man, every woman would have access to what previously only the elites had access to, the life of the mind, time for spiritual concerns, time to read, more time to spend with the children, community, You mentioned the shirtwaist factories, the strikes there in New York City, and the people talked about a deep community during those strikes, the possibility of expanding our ability with our time, our ability to live with each other successfully, to live conviviality as a part of the American heritage. I hope we can begin to reconsider the possibility that there is wealth beyond just money, just consumerism. There's a wealth in time where we can share our lives, share our dreams. That is the last, I think, the best part of the American dream that John Thruslow Adams, he coined the phrase the American dream, and he had in mind that higher progress beyond the marketplace.
Thanks for that call. And Ben, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
That's Ben Honeycutt, labor historian and professor at the University of Iowa. We've been talking about the history behind the 8-hour workday and efforts to shorten Americans' working hours after Senator Bernie Sanders introduced a new bill called the 32-Hour Work Week Act last week, aimed at implementing a shorter work week without a loss of pay. Still time for you to share your thoughts on the idea and maybe your experiences if you've worked a different kind of work schedule, whether it was a 32-hour work week that counted as full-time or four 10-hour days a week. Or I know there's some plants in Wisconsin that have 3x12 and 4x12 alternating. Love to hear your experiences, how you felt about it, whether you worked there or if you're a business manager or owner who's experimented with these kind of things. Let us know about it. You can email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org.